Senate Committee on Local Government and Urban Affairs will come to order. Roger, what bill are you here on?
Committee asked at the last, I think there was a request that a suggested amendment be made on 891 having to do with assurance that if there was a vote, that there be required a vote of the people on any tax base established for the purposes of the Metropolitan Service District. I think it was our view that the present statute, without any amendment in it at all, requires that, and that there's no particular point in doing it. But I think if the if you wish to do it anyhow, a statement along the lines submitted in the material you have here would accomplish that end. Namely,
I think probably what the problem was is that the TriMet has authority to impose the tax without the word of people.
That's right.
And if it merged with some other political entity, they may pick up that power. I think that was a concern.
All right.
Is that right, Senator Carson?
All right, now that power already exists. In other words, at the present time, the Metropolitan Service District has the authority to take over TriMet by unilateral action of the service district. If it takes over the service district by unilateral action, it also picks up the powers that TriMet has. So I think that there's no aim to change that part of the legislation. At the same time, if new powers are going to be added, or even the existing powers other than the TriMet activity, we're required to go for a vote of the people on anything except mass transit. We're required to go to the people for a vote to finance that activity or develop user charges to finance it. So the only power that you pick up by taking over TriMet, the only power of taxation you pick up is the power that it already has. You don't pick up any expanded authority to impose taxes in other activities with the authority that exists in the TriMet bill.
Well, then what purpose does this bring us?
I don't think it serves any useful purpose. know, I don't like to sit up here and testify that I'm against something that I gave to you, but I think that we felt that we were asked to submit an amendment that would set forth that if you're going to have a tax base, you had to have a vote of the people on it. We think it already exists in the present law. If your intent was that to require that if we took over TriMet, that we would have to go back to the people to pick up the powers that they already have. I don't think I could sit here and testify that the service district or the city would favor that.
Right. Before we go into some general questions that I have, are there specific questions with respect to this item? Senator Carson, did you have a question?
No, I'm trying to find the bill. We've got a turkey buried in here somewhere that's supposed to be a little noxious bill. And the point that I was trying to make, it says that if one jurisdiction has a power, that jurisdiction may merge with another jurisdiction and they share the power.
Right.
So what I'm saying is, pass that bill. I agree with you totally, but in our present situation, just as you out, at least my understanding is the same.
Right.
But if we pass this decision in here now, my view of the matter is, I think there's a strong possibility that we've just given you TriMet taxing powers.
For every activity.
For every activity. Yeah.
I don't think that the service district board nor the city would favor that authority.
I
misinterpreted, I think, really what you were after, because I don't think we even favor that bill.
Recollection on this turkey or pigeon or whatever it may be was that wasn't that limited to the particular activity?
Well, no.
Do you know the bill we're talking about?
Yes, I do. What it does is it gives a grant of power to any kind of intergovernmental contract, like a water district, let's say, engages in a contract between a city and a water district. The water district picks up all the power of the city in the intergovernmental agreement.
Well, for the purposes of the subject matter of the contract.
That's right. And let's say that is not the kind of legislation particularly that we are interested in supporting.
The real reason for which that bill was introduced, I think it has merit, but it could be subject to a lot of abuse, and that's a problem.
That's right. Yeah, it had a good purpose, but it's too broad.
All right. Now, are there further questions?
Well, I don't think this addresses itself to narrowing down the authority that you're talking about, and I apologize. I didn't really understand. I think
what. Well, I made very clear.
Yeah.
All right, Lloyd, would you, I don't think you've addressed yourself to the bill in general.
At one time or another, I think I have, but I'd be glad to go back through it again.
Would you?
Yes. This legislation is intended to change, with a vote of the people, is intended to change the boundaries of the service district from the present boundaries, which are something less than Clackamas, Washington, Multnomah County. That is, the present boundaries of the service district are the urban areas of Clackamas, Washington, and Multnomah counties. When you look at the problems that we're dealing with in the metropolitan area, I think it was our judgment that the service district boundaries should be coterminous with Clackamas, Washington, and Multnomah counties. So that's point number one. Point number two is that there has to be a vote of the people if you expand the boundaries, and along with expanding the boundaries, there is an expanded authority for going after different activities. Those activities that are specifically mentioned in the bill are the authority to take over land use planning that is incorporated in Senate Bill 761, as I recall. Is it 761? 769, the authority to take over the 769 responsibilities, and in addition to that, it gives the authority to go after specifically metropolitan aspects of parks, zoos, provide central service and financial aid to libraries within the district, acquire, construct, maintain, and operate metropolitan jail facilities, construct, maintain, and operate metropolitan communication systems, perform such other services as may be authorized by the voters. So that, if this legislation is passed, the next move would need to be one, a resolution passed by the district which would have a vote of the people to authorize it to change its boundaries and to take on the additional activities that are set forth in the legislation. And the aim, of course, is to, among other things, consolidate CRAG and the Metropolitan Service District into one jurisdiction, so that you've got one agency planning and operating facilities at the metropolitan level, which I think does not exist now, and which, at least the way it stands now, is a poor way to function. Specifically, that the CRAG plans, for example, CRAG did the metropolitan plan for transportation. TriMet operates it. CRAG would do the metropolitan plan for highways. Then you'd have various jurisdictions operating it. In the case of parks, in the case of comprehensive planning, in the case of regional aspects of libraries, drainage, garbage, and so on, there's no particular reason why the agency that plans shouldn't operate the facilities that is planning. And the aim here, then, is to put together these two jurisdictions into one so that it can function as a unit. And I think there's plenty of evidence to indicate it'll function more efficiently, and you can identify who's responsible, which at the present time is a little bit confusing. If you do a transportation plan, or if you do a land use plan, or a plan for garbage, or anything else, like right now we're doing a plan for garbage in the area, CRAG is doing the planning in a contract with the state, and is subcontracting with the service district who's going to finally operate the garbage system in the metropolitan area. The garbage system in the metropolitan area, we would have to enter into an intergovernmental contract at the present time between those areas outside of the service district boundaries in Clackamas and Washington County and those in. While if the boundaries change, we're going to be in a position where we can serve the whole area by one jurisdiction. So the aim here then is to broaden the authority with a vote of the people, and to, along with that, broaden the boundaries so that it is coterminous with the planning boundaries that already exist.
Are there questions? Okay.
You've discussed the sewage disposal, sanitary landfills, transportation.
Speak up just a little bit, Tom.
I was listing the services that you've mentioned. Are there any others that should be included?
Or all right.
Do you believe that they're included in this bill?
The ones we already have under present law within the present service district boundaries are the metropolitan aspects of sewage, solid waste disposal, drainage, which covers all aspects of drainage, and the board can take over TriMet. The TriMet activities, if it so chooses. Then the additional ones that are listed. Now, in addition to that, the way the present law reads and the way this bill would read is that we could go for additional services by a vote of the people. So that it does open up, if it looks like there's identifiable problems that we need to go after, then we could do it. If we got a mandate from the people or got a support from the people to take it on. At least my judgment is that if a service is being provided, even though it, let's say, isn't ideally organized, if a service is being adequately provided now, there's no particular point in trying to take over something that's already being well done. On the other hand, if it's clear that, for example, in the case of drainage, we've got a metropolitan problem that can't be solved by each jurisdiction. Johnson Creek is a classic example. Goes into Washington County, Clackamas County, Portland, Milwaukee. There's a whole series of jurisdictions that goes through it. I don't see anyone but the service district being able to cope with that. So the authority or the kind of service it could provide, I think, should fill in the gaps in the metropolitan area of services that are inadequately being provided. Jail, the jail facilities, I think this committee has heard before, the fact is that we are not making the maximum use of jail facilities in that metropolitan area. We can do it if this legislation passes and if we get the funding. Even by intergovernmental contract, we could have this jurisdiction do it with the funding that's already available and make better use of our facilities without any more tax dollars. In fact, I think there'd be evidence to indicate we could save tax dollars.
Do you envision adding services such as fire?
Well, if I don't see any sense in doing those unless there's evidence that the level of service in one way or another is grossly inadequate. You notice in here that there's the 9/11 or the communication element is authorized. It's clear that in the communication or emergency communication situation that the individual jurisdictions are not adequately coping with the problem there in the metropolitan area. Someone in Tigard, if he has a fire, really doesn't know oftentimes who to call up because the city of Tigard doesn't provide the service. It's a fire district provides the service. Or who does he call up if he wants police service? What we're proposing to do is to have 911, which means you can dial 911, and that'll connect you into an emergency service system, and once you've identified where the problem is, you'll get the agency that has responsibility out there, and that ought to be coordinated on a metropolitan basis. So this we can see as a useful service by a regional agency, but not to take over the individual activities of that jurisdiction, which are at least for the most part, I think, adequate right now. If there's evidence to indicate there ought to be a change, we could go after it. We've got, even in the sewage business now, where there's an authority to take over, there isn't adequate evidence, at least at this point, that we ought to be moving in on that. If we get into, let's say, extensive costs that are of a metropolitan nature, maybe we need to. So I think that there's no easy answer as to what ought to be done at the metropolitan level. We ought to look at the issues and say, well, we've got a problem, and get some intergovernmental agreement that we've got a problem, and then go after it. And that means that I don't see any kind of easy, let's say, metropolitan answer that we ought to have a metropolitan government, but rather we ought to deal with those issues where we got a problem, let the other ones alone.
Are there further questions? Okay.
I will on a negative side, state that I realize that there are some proposed amendments here by TriMet with reference to pulling out the TriMet authority in this legislation. We feel that proposal to pull out the authority of TriMet in this legislation is an inappropriate place to do it. They want to pull out the TriMet authority, let them pull it out as a separate bill, not incorporated into the kind of proposal we have here.
You mean to amend the Metropolitan Service District Act?
That's right. Now, we will oppose that legislation in any form. In our judgment, if there is a proposal for TriMet to be removed from this, I think that there are a lot of issues that need to be brought up that are independent from whether this legislation should pass or not, and we'll be glad to bring them up at that time. But I think in the long run, if you're going to say there ought to be some involvement of local officials in what's going on in the way we run our transportation system, pulling this out and leaving the TriMet authority where it is now is not the way to do it.
Right. Nyack Cleveland from the Library Association is here and has some questions. And why don't you come on up? Would you mind remaining there?
Sure.
I'm Nina Cleveland. I represent the Oregon Library Association. We have some questions. We don't have a position on this bill. And I wish to say that I am happy to identify the person who's that interested in library service. I wish we could capture some of the enthusiasm and put it behind our own bill, House Bill 2123, to get some state support for local public libraries. We've seen library service added to two special district bills this session, and we really don't know why. this particular bill has a very limited and specific application because there's only one MSD, and there are only three standard metropolitan service areas in Oregon. And Multnomah and Clackamas counties already have county library systems. So we have some question about how library service happened to be added to a metropolitan service district bill. And then we also wanted to know what happens if Senate Bill 534 is passed with House Bill 2860 engrossed into it. The House State and Federal Affairs did that a week or so ago, or 2 weeks ago, and I tried to get an engrossed bill this morning to bring up here, but it isn't ready yet. But that was a county service district in a metropolitan boundary commission, so there'd be only three places that could apply, and it had library service added to it, I think, for Washington County. But if you pass that bill and then you pass this one, do you have another kind of a conflict? And we would like to know how existing libraries would be handled under this bill if it were passed, because there are existing libraries in the three counties. And we wonder if there's a conflict between this bill and Chapter 357, which is the basic library law, which, for instance, calls for the creation of libraries by about four different methods, but with boards, and gives them very specific powers. What do you do about that in the places where you already have libraries if you add them under the Metropolitan Service District bill? Now, present library law allows regional systems by contracts between counties, but there isn't any mechanism for a regional district as such for libraries. And perhaps there should be some such a mechanism. And we wonder whether the sponsors of this bill, and likewise the sponsors of the other ones I mentioned, see this bill as a route or a design which could be used by the rest of the state to achieve some kind of regional system, which is our goal. Our goal is better public library service all over the state.
And you think regional systems are desirable?
Systems are the way to go. Systems are the way to go.
Well, then you think that it should be included
Well, it would have such a very limited application here, and this is a district which already has libraries, county libraries.
Well, you know the problem they had in Multnomah County recently, where there was a big discussion that people from Washington and Clackamas County are using the library and aren't contributing it.
Well, now what, under this bill,
certainly addresses itself to that problem.
What would happen then to the local public libraries in Washington County and to the Multnomah County Library? In those three counties, you have libraries organized under three different patterns which are possible in the state law, and this would put them all, would or would it?
No, I don't think it would.
So that's why I brought up all these questions.
No, I think that this is a financing vehicle only. It's a vehicle for establishing a way to have a regional financial base and an opportunity to have intergovernmental communication between the different library systems so that every library in the Portland metropolitan area could have access to every other library as far as information is concerned, and books. And this provides a financing vehicle for doing it.
And what about the unserved urban population of Washington County?
Well, just a minute. It doesn't do the committee any good for you to ask questions of Mr. Anderson that we can't even
I can appreciate that.
Let me say then, let's see, I don't know whether...
Well, I'd like to have the questions for you.
Oh, well, I asked him if this would adequately serve the unserved urban population of Washington County.
I think it'll open up the opportunity for access to the library system of Multnomah County, where it doesn't know. It'll open up, a financing access and use of the central library that it, to some extent, is being restricted because of financing. It could provide a vehicle, if there is agreement, for the creation of a list of additional libraries in the area. Since it would be my guess that most of the service district board members, the focus of attention of the board is not on libraries per se, but simply a financing vehicle to broaden the capability of the library system in the area. I don't think there's been any discussion by the board or any desire expressed by the board to take over that sort of an activity, but rather to continue the library boards that exist and simply use this as a vehicle for strengthening the financing system of the area. That's more complicated than just saying it that way, I realize.
Yeah,
but still, it's clear that the financing system we have now is inadequate. So this is simple. This is no aim in this thing to upend that at all.
I feel reluctant to take the committee's time any further with discussions that Mr. Anderson and I might have, or the association might have at some other level. And I do want to say that I appreciate your listening to these questions when it might reasonably be expected that I would have the answers and not the questions, and I don't have. But I would like you to consider these matters as they relate to libraries, and I appreciate your time.
Well, of course, the counties of Washington, Clackamas, and Multnomah County, through the Intergovernmental Procedures Act against such colleges, could do the same thing. Anyway.
Without the Metropolitan Services.
That's right.
Yes,
yeah,
so they want to contract.
They can contract with each other.
So, and that's exactly who's going to be on the board here. Those same officials, all the representatives of all the cities in here. So, I've gathered that can't imagine there being any problem with libraries. Anything that adversely affects libraries.
Well, I'm not so sure that. That I'm trying to protect existing libraries as much as wondering how this relates to change, for instance, in Chapter 357, or whether it would really be a vehicle to get better service, or whether it would be proposed as a vehicle to give people an excuse not to do anything by saying the Metropolitan Service District could do it, or... Well, I just leave it up in the air with all those questions, and I'll give you a copy
you.
Of this if you like.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to...
Mr. Chairman, is there anything more that you want from us with reference to this bill as far as financing? Senator Carson, for example...
Do you have questions, Senator Meeker?
No, I do.
Okay. Okay.
I want to thank you for your service, Mr. Chairman. Oh, no, you call like that.
Thank you very much.
He's a good fishing partner, too.
Not as a House member, I'm curious how long you've been seeing some different types of plan.
They're all
we're past 100.
They're all very desirable legislation, and they differ primarily in degree.
I described them yesterday as my castor oil concession. I'm just trying to get over how much I have to say.
We've only, there's no bill like this that's been sent out yet. We sent out a crack bill. This is a super crack bill. You were not here to testify, is that right, Roger?
No.
I know okay, then we're going to go to these Planning Commission bills, 25, 48, 29, 65, and also I want those who testify on those bills to address their attention to Senate Bill 832, which we already had a hearing on, but it's held because of these two House bills coming over. Representative Morris. Chris, we're going to get back to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Representative Brad Morris, District 51. These two bills, House Bill 25 and 48 and House Bill 2965, are two bills that we labored long and hard over on the House side.
What committee? They come out of local government?
Local government. We took about it must have been 8 or 9 bills and consolidated them into two bills. One is the City Planning Commission, and one is the County Planning Commission. Are you familiar with the bills? Do you want me briefly to go through them and just tell you what the highlights are? House Bill 2548 deals with county planning commissions. This particular bill in Section 1 would enable the cities and counties to join together into a joint planning commission effort. There are circumstances, for example, geographically, problems don't know boundaries, that would enable the cities and the county in that particular area to join together into a joint planning effort. There is one amendment that's going to be presented to you on this particular bill and probably the other one, and I think that it would strengthen the bill. It's from City Manager in Bend, Oregon, and from the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments, and I think this amendment that will be presented to you will strengthen this particular section. Section 2 deals with a conflict of interest and is probably one section that we dealt over longer than any other section. And this principally is trying to address itself to the problem of real estate interests involved in those members that do serve on these commissions. There was all kinds of proposals drafted to include consideration of monetary amounts that might be earned by the individual. No more than such a percentage could be earned. But we decided finally on this particular language. In Section 4, it would authorize the county planning body to be that governing body that would adopt the comprehensive plan or to make any changes to, rather than, for example, a planning commission making that decision. In Section 9 is a designation of a planning director. And this is important, the language that we have in Section 9, because it says the governing body of each county shall designate an individual to serve as planning director for the county responsible for the administration of planning. Now, for those counties sparsely populated in eastern Oregon, this language would enable them to appoint an individual to serve as a planning director who might also serve in another county. Some of them simply don't have the resources available to hire a planning director for that particular county. So this would enable a planning director to serve more than one county if that's the wish of the governing body. Section 10 is a very important element because it deals with the financial interests of the members of that planning commission. Section 11 gets us directly involved into the concepts under Senate Bill 100, and this is for the purpose of obtaining citizen participation. It creates an advisory committee system. Section 12 deals with the concept of a contested case. This is the direct result of the Fasano ruling. I believe it was in Washington County. Section 13 is the concept of a hearing officer. And this concept basically speaks to the problem of trying to remove from the Planning Commission itself having to listen and to take testimony in all the different hearings on the question of planning to give them more time to plan. And it's important here to note that in subsection 2, in the absence of a hearings officer or his inability to serve, the Planning Commission or the governing body may serve as a hearings officer. Section 17, on the appeal procedure from a hearing, it would go to the governing body to make that decision. Now, I know that's a rough highlight of that particular bill, and of course, we're getting deeper involved in it. House Bill 2965 is much the same. It deals with the city planning commissions. One area in here that I particularly feel is very important, I served for 4 years in local government on the city council in Medford. And as the law is now, the members of the planning commission, the city planning commission, that selection is made by one individual, and that's the mayor. And I personally think that's wrong. I think the selection should be made by the mayor and council. I think that's very important.
Did you point that page line?
Okay.
165, 32, line 13,
right. Right. I guess it's here as city council. Rather than the mayor and city council.
165, page 2, the line 13, 14, 15.
The concept of a hearings officer in the city planning's bill is in essence a may rather than shall. The concept of advisory committees is in essence a may rather than shall in the city planning bill. Senate Bill 832 is much the same. It's a little broader because it addresses itself to city or to county civil service commissions, civil service boards for school districts, firemen civil service commissions, housing authorities, boxing and wrestling commissions. We did not get into that particular area. Otherwise, we pretty much have covered this bill. There is one section that was not involved, and that is Section 2 of Senate Bill 832. That was not addressed to in those particular bills. There is Roger still here? Maybe he left. There's several messages that I have on occasion passed from the Senate to the House, particularly on Senate Bill 832. In essence, we have a delicate balance. Substantive amendments might change that delicate balance of agreement. We labored long and hard on these two bills. We involved everyone from Common Cause to city and county officials, housing, the construction industry. I really think that if we make substantive changes, extensive substantive changes, that we're going to create some problems, because we pretty well have got a consensus of agreement on these two bills.
Let me interrupt just a second. On that particular thing you mentioned on the appointing power being the council rather than the mayor, was there testimony from representatives of the city of Portland on that?
I don't recall from Portland. Yes, I had a very informal conversation. I believe it was with Don Barney. It was not formal testimony that they would concur
did
with
it. Did it cause any concern?
From the informal discussions that I had, no, because that was a concern. What would happen in the Portland?
Senator, you finish your. I just from a personal viewpoint, I think, of course, all such appointments should be confirmed by the city council. I kind of like somebody being the leader of the council and having it appointed by the mayor and approved by the council. I like that better than I have.
Oh, I frankly would agree with you. I personally think that perhaps the appointment should be made by the mayor, subject to council approval.
It just recognizes leadership. Mm-hmm.
But I disagree with the concept that the appointment will be made by the mayor, and he can override the council.
I have to listen to that.
Senator Turnstead. According to this bill, what's the minimum number that could be on the commission?
Five.
You're aware of that language.
That's on the city or the county?
City. Wow. Didn't we pass a bill that?
I believe it's five, isn't it?
Five, seven, or nine?
We passed it. Yeah,
because you used to say nine, right?
You used to mandate nine for the city.
You said five, so
359. In the House Judiciary Committee and Governor Burrell, no. They had their hearing on last week, the first time they got the Senate bill.
Well, in Section 2, in line 13, the commission shall consist of nine members, was deleted.
Yeah, I've taken it out.
It was deleted. Yeah, it was deleted.
Well, it's covered in the other bill, right? It says five seconds.
What if the other bill doesn't pass?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to report back to the committee on the status.
Because I don't think there's any number you've mentioned in this bill.
That may well be.
Senator Cardinal, David.
True of this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paul just indicated that the bill came out of judiciary room yesterday.
No, it should be done before, and it came out from several years.
I'll get voted on sometime next week, probably.
Yeah. It'll be 10 carryovers, yeah, that'll be 5th or 6th of July.
I have a question.
Brad, I have a real problem with, you've been a city councilman, and I've been a planning commissioner. One of the things that concerns me is the willy-nilly removal authority of the city mayor or the city council of a planning commission. The bill that you referred to, 832, of Senator Halligan, spoke to a problem that they had in Selma County and other areas where they had a bad team where the planning commission was appointed and then went in a different direction than that council or the commissioners wanted. The other side of the coin is, however, if you already have an independent planning body, and if they're really serving the pleasure of the mayor, then I think they're about as independent as the mayor, you know, the mayor's clock. I know you've spent a lot of time on that, but I worry about city judges that are serving at the pleasure of the mayor, and I worry about planning commissioners that are serving at the pleasure of the mayor. If they disagree with the mayor, I think they're running the risk, as some city judges have found, of being thrown out of office, not for cause, but just because they have to disagree with the mayor. And I was wondering, 832, and apparently both these bills speak to the planning commissioners serving at the will of the city council. In other words, anytime they vote the wrong way, according to the council, they can be booted out. If you have stopped it by requiring a hearing, which is, I think, a good idea.
And how would you think it should be? What would be your suggestion?
Well, the question I'm asking, and when we appoint people, the governor appoints people, they're done both ways. There's some appointees on state boards that serve as pleasure of the governor, and some who serve can only be removed for the term and only can be removed for cause, which hopefully during the interim we're going to specify what that constitutes. I think if you're purely advisory, say long-range planning, that sort of thing, I have no objection to serving if you're really advising the council. When in fact you have some judicial function, decisions on variance, if you can go to maybe a field and set aside by the council or the court, you're exercising, I think, a judicial function. And I wonder, my feeling is that maybe planning commissioners should not be removed except for cause, and then delineate the cause, neglect to the violation of conflict of interest or whatever. But not removed because they disagree with the mayor on whether or not Blackacre ought to be developed.
Well, the philosophy.
The other side of the coin.
Right. The philosophy that I have, and I think many people do, is the responsibility for planning rests with the elected members of that governing body. That's their responsibility. Now, they delegate authority for the day-to-day planning to a planning commission, but they still have that responsibility. Now, I think we've strengthened it in that it cannot be a capricious decision by one individual, for example, the mayor.
I agree. That's
and it broadens it. It also, I think, protects the individual planning commission member, because as the language is drafted now, it protects him from capricious decisions by the governing body, because it enables him to have a hearings if he requests it. In other words, here's an individual that served for 6 years, and to protect his own reputation.
Those are two good improvements, and they move a long way for removing my objections, but I just wondered.
I still think the ultimate responsibility rests with the elected officials, and if there becomes a problem, then it should reflect back on the governing body that made the decision to appoint that individual.
I agree. It rests with the elected officials. But question is, how independent is this advisory and almost quasi-judicial body going to be? And I think not everybody agrees with me, obviously, but I think there's a direct connection between independence and grounds for removal. I think you're really serving the pleasure of the governor, you're serving the pleasure of the council. But the minute you displease them, you run the risk.
I think one thing that you probably, it would be difficult to sit down and establish the criteria for exactly what those grounds for dismissal would be. In other words, to try to find the rules of the ball game. I think that would be a difficult task, and it would take a period of time, probably an experience, to accomplish it. And frankly, I would like to see these bills passed, and then if we want to take that time and build up a caseload of experience, then we could maybe sit down and define what those grounds for cause might be.
Well, that needs to be done.
Senator Howard voted aye, huh?
Okay, are there further questions of Representative Moore? Brad, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very helpful. Appreciate you coming over.
Thank you.
Okay, now, okay, we've got people from out of town here to testify on these Planning Commission bills, and you're going to be heard. I have to sit here and hear you after the second time. Senator Carson moved the amendment to Senate Bill 826.
I got it.
You want to explain those briefly?
Chairman, 826 is an old friend of ours that has to do with planning districts. Went to the floor and was discussed strongly and defeated by one vote, returned and sent back up here. We've considered a number of alternatives, I think six or seven alternatives. This is the alternative that the subcommittee of one, me and several people with whom I consulted, Bob Logan, Les Gavart, Dean, and Terry, and several others have come up with this throughout. Basically, what we're trying to do on 826 is it's a planning district bill. There's some sensitivity that the role of the counties ought to be strengthened. The attempt here by the language is to insert a new section 14, which relates to review of the planning district. And and the Joint Legislative Committee on Land Use and Environment. Now, this is the committee that has been created by Senate Bill 100, which has been signed. And then, in cooperation with local governments and state agencies, make a study of intergovernmental cooperation and the boundaries of the interim planning districts. And that's what we're calling the districts that are set forth on pages 2 and 3 of your bill. 826.
Senator Carson, Steve pointed out that in 100, the name of the committee is the Joint Legislative Committee on Land Use, and joint is capitalized, and it does not say an environment.
All right, I'll make that correction when I offer these amendments. Thank you, Steve. basically, what we're trying to do is the same thing 826 did. There's been no change from the time we changed it, which we substantially did in growth form. But to indicate that these are interim planning districts and to suggest or require that the new Committee on Land Use, Joint Legislative Committee on Land Use, study the planning districts and take recommendations for revision, realignment, and also study the operation of councils of government and the boundaries of the planning districts and report back to the 1975 Legislative Assembly.
Is there further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
better here.
Well, we have to disagree here in Tennessee that I don't think that this solves the problem of real estate, particularly in regards to the listing of the proposed district. I think that we'd be much better off, although I don't intend to make a motion because I know that we're fast, to eliminate entirely Section 2, which creates the planning district without the aid of the need for this amendment. We have currently the ability of counties to cooperate together in this fashion. And I don't see that the amendment solves the problem.
Is there further discussion? Those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed signify by saying no.
No.
Okay, the amendments are adopted. Senator Carson moves Senate Bill 826 to the floor to pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Aye. Senator Carson?
Aye.
Senator Howard?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
No. You'll carry it again. Okay, now, Senator Howard moves Senate Bill 891 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Did we amend it, Mr. Chairman?
No. Are you talking about the library? I've discussed that with Mrs. Cleveland, and yeah, I don't care when this gets over the House. They take libraries out completely. If it's a problem, she's not sure it's a problem. She thinks probably it's going to help rather than hurt, but she's just unsure, that's all.
In the opinion of this committee, do we believe that Senate Bill 891 will eliminate the boundary conflict problem in the metropolitan area?
I think so.
I don't think it will eliminate it, but I'm he's more optimistic than I am, but I don't think it is. I don't think the county line is what it is. As long as you stick the county line, you know, well, you stick the county line, don't think there's a geographical distribution.
I don't mean to say the boundary questions are not going to be raised, but they will be, but I think this would be very helpful in resolving the question.
The whole thing, of course, is the fact that the people have to vote.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And that was our understanding all the time, that the policy they want, the policy we want. All right, so further discussion, clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Now, I'll of course, carry 891 and we'll work out a schedule on it. They are just automatically going to go back. I don't think it went on before the same day.
No, but I have printing problems and verbal problems, and they somewhere between 5 days and 10 days behind after they completed the report on the floor.
Okay.
Is that a
thank you.
Sometimes 1 day through.
Okay. Now we're back to the planning commission bill. Let's see. Mr. Fasano, you had some amendments, is that correct?
Chairman, I just found out about these bills a few days ago. I have some thoughts. I have not prepared any specific amendments. I haven't had the opportunity.
Who do you represent?
I represent myself.
Well, look, then, if that's the case, let me... I thought you had some amendments, and so I wanted to get those before the committee if you had them.
I do
so
not.
The other witnesses would have an opportunity to address themselves.
I do not. I have not had the opportunity to put down anything in writing.
Are these going to be significant amendments?
I would, yes, one or two of them would be. What all if
you want to address yourself to the problems that you see in these bills that require, in your opinion, require amendments?
Yes.
So we can do okay. Let's go ahead. Let's do that. Now you're talking about both 2448 and 2965.
Right.
Have you looked at 832?
For the first time this morning, took a glance at it.
but just a glance.
Okay.
But my areas of concern aren't so much in the method of appointment and removal.
Excuse me, which bill are you from? Oh, I'm sorry. You have to identify yourself on the tape, Lou, and...
I'm Louis J. Fasano. I'm an attorney from Portland.
Right, and then refer to the specific bill, because we have to have it on the tape so we can sort out the...
On House Bill 2548, my specific concern comes toward the end with some definitions and procedures. Some of them are perhaps not significant, and as I said, maybe one or two are. In section 15, sub 4, the bill states, if an application for a permit is denied, the application shall not be submitted again until at least 6 months after the date of the final action denying the application. I don't disagree with that, but I think the applicant should be able to submit an application for a different use. If he comes in and asks for a zone change to allow him to build, let's say, apartments of a specific density, and he's denied, I think he should have the right to come back and ask for a zone change to put up a commercial use or something.
Yeah, because he'd really be reacting to the desires of the Planning Commission oftentimes in doing it, right?
Yes, and it's different merits.
This language, to me, was specifically prohibiting him from doing this.
Well, it says the application, and it's a question of what the application means. If it means...
Well, it would only be if it came in the second time, it was an amended application, then I think this might be prohibiting language. But if it's a new application, and I don't know as far as Planning Commission what they do, let me just ask a question, maybe you can answer. If you have, for instance, a person wants to build 15 units, he makes an application, they turn it down and say, you can go for 9 if you want. He doesn't know what he wants to do. Maybe that's not a good example. But anyway, he's denied what he wants. So he comes back in with a modified application. Does he have to pay his fee over again?
As I understand it, yes. It wouldn't be a modified application if he's denied.
Okay, the county council for Washington County says they do. So it seems to me that when he does that, then we're not talking about the application.
All right, that's fine. I'm concerned with the clarity in it. Yes. If in fact it's going to be construed that way, I have no objection. In section 17, sub 1, it speaks of a party aggrieved by the action of a hearings officer, and that the aggrieved person may appeal such approval or denial. Well, right now, Mr. Sullivan and I are contesting in a couple of cases just what aggrieved means. In one case, I don't think I'm misstating this, he, at least in arguing some motions, has taken the position that the zone change applicant isn't necessarily aggrieved unless he sets forth some grounds for being aggrieved, economic detriment or some sort of thing. In my opinion, the current law in the area doesn't require anything as extreme as showing a detriment of some sort or other. I think a broad term like aggrieved is a good term. It allows somebody who has been disturbed by an approval or a denial to have his day in court, so to speak. My point is that the word aggrieved I like because it's broad, but yet it's not specific enough. I would like to see the word aggrieved defined a little more precisely. There is some reference in one or perhaps both of the bills about the people who receive notice of the hearing have standing to appeal it to the governing body of the county, but we may or may not have someone beyond that. When we use the term aggrieved person and we pick up someone else by defining them as someone who's received notice, well, obviously then the aggrieved contemplates somebody else also. Who is it? What are the criteria for being aggrieved? I would like to have the time to propose a definition of aggrieved, or to see a definition of aggrieved. And the extreme situation is the one I just put to you, where Mr. Sullivan and I are in this situation where he feels that the applicant himself may not be aggrieved unless certain criteria are met. Now, I really haven't looked at Webster, and I doubt that the county commissions or the judges are going to look at Webster either. I think they're going to look at law books and other things that this area right now, the area of land use planning, is so haphazard and precarious right now that the more definite we can make it, the more guidelines we can establish, the better. We're just going to compound the problem. People speak now of all the ramifications of the Fasano case, but it's nothing. It's just a start. It just covers one small area, in my opinion, of a huge field. And it's still very, very much up in the air.
I'm not a lawyer, but what happens if we define aggrieved in one law in the state of Oregon? Shouldn't that as it fits
in this particular
bill, and some other bill, of course, it means nothing.
Well, it would be defined with regard to this bill. For the purpose of this bill, aggrieved means. Or if we have to do it another way, that's fine too. But what I'm looking for is some precision here. Just who is it that's got the right to appeal? From the hearings officer to the county commission or the city council, whichever it may be, the governing body. Who's got that right? Right now, I don't think it's very clear at all. In fact, this says aggrieved. The zoning ordinances, I know in Washington County, gives the right to appeal to an aggrieved person. But the current statute that's used for judicial appeals talks about people who suffered an injury to a substantial right, which is inconsistent to me with the term aggrieved. If it, unless you define it, the word aggrieved, for a particular purpose to mean that, it's inconsistent. Aggrieved is much broader.
Let me ask you a question. What if you're in a neighborhood where there have been some pot zoning going on, but now stopped through neighborhood action, or neighborhood to mean something where people are 2-3 miles apart, but still calling it a neighborhood, and then it happens again. So maybe it's a mile and a half away from me. And so I'm not within the 100 feet limitation or notice area, but I'm very aggrieved.
All right, that's
now,
my point.
Can I appeal under here?
That's my point. I don't know if you can. Now, I know that there are suggestions that aggrieved may include or perhaps even be limited to those people who show up at
a
hearing.
Why don't you go on to others and then take them, if you've got some amendments to cover this, get them down.
All right. Subsection 2 of Section 17 says that in accordance with rules adopted by the governing body shall hold a hearing on the action of the hearings officer appealed from, as set forth in the transcript of the hearing, the written finding, and so forth. To me, that doesn't tell me just what that governing body is going to do. Are they going to look at this record and, to use lawyers' terms, have a de novo review? Are they going to look for a limited type of error? Just what is it they're going to do? What are the standards and criteria that they're going to follow? I think this has to be geared to current law, but still, again, I'm looking for some sort of a standard, some sort of precision that those of us who are involved in land use planning can follow. I would like to see a greater definition of just what the governing body is going to do when they have an appeal before them. And I would like to make a suggested amendment there. The...
We were having a subcommittee.
Well, we got a schedule problem, straighten it out.
Now, I think that the hearings officer concept of these bills is very good. Anything that can be done to expedite and shorten the process in land use planning and land use changes is beneficial to both the applicant and the people who are opposed to any change, in that they can get it resolved as quickly as possible. On the applicant side, he's got money tied up in this thing, and the longer it carries on, the more expensive it gets to him, and perhaps may even cost him a development that would otherwise be desirable. So the hearings officer concept is a step in the right direction toward expediting this. I think right now in most situations we have three-step sort of procedure where someone talks with the staff about his application for a change, gets a feeling there, pro or con. If he gets a pro feeling, he'll go then for his hearing with the planning commission, and he'll get a pro or con there, and then he goes from there to the county commissioners or the city council. And at any point in that line, there can be an about face, which is, well, about face, which is totally different than the level below him. Going from a hearings officer to the zoning or the governing body, I think, is good. We might even think about going so far as to taking it straight from the hearings officer to court. The, as recognized by our Supreme Court in the Fasano case, there are some things to be feared by, or feared in the area of land use when we've got legislative bodies involved. In this particular case, it was a county commission, and the court used words, having weighed the dangers of making desirable change more difficult against the dangers of the almost irresistible pressures that can be asserted by private economic interests on local government, etc. The point of it is to get it out of the political as much as possible, and the court recognizes that this happens in land use planning. There's a lot of money involved, and again, going from the hearings officer directly to court, I'd like to think further, and I will submit an amendment, proposed amendment on this, either directly from there to the court, or perhaps going through the planning commission as opposed to the county commissioners or the city council, who are more politically oriented than a planning commission. Then, once we get to court, what happens? These bills provide for a review under ORS 34010 to 34100, which is the writ of review procedure. And in my opinion, it is outdated and outmoded. I feel that, as I mentioned earlier, it makes reference to a person having to show an injury to a substantial right before he's entitled to have a writ issue. The law doesn't say anything like that. There are other aspects of it which just are not consistent with current zoning law, as little as it may be. It is not consistent. I feel that once, in order to get into court, whether it's from a hearings officer, from a planning commission, or from the county commission, we should have a procedure that is simple and expedient, perhaps on the order of some simple notice of appeal or request for judicial review, where it has to be filed within 30 days, that within 60 days or some other reasonable time after that 30 days, the court shall have a hearing, conduct a hearing, to review the record de novo to see if the law has been complied with, whatever that law may be, whether it's a question of burden of proof or what have you. Review it de novo the way our courts of our appellate courts review our equity cases now. All right, in summary, I think these bills are a step in the right direction. What I'm mostly concerned with is the judicial process, I suppose, that we all, those of us who get into this area, I think, feel safer with a judicial determination rather than a determination from a political, local political body, and we should do whatever we can to simplify and expedite this, hopefully, non-political judicial review. This would benefit both the applicant for a zone change and anybody who opposes the zone change, regardless of whether it is approved or denied. They both have this common interest in avoiding those dangers that the court recognizes that exist at the local level. I would like very much to work up some suggested amendments, and I'll do it as quickly as I can.
That'd be pretty fast.
How fast?
These Thursdays, consider why.
Okay, I will.
I don't think these bills are going to be here.
All right, I will.
Did you have practice some of these?
Thank you.
With respect to the remaining witnesses, I'm going to take those that are here from out of town, will stay here as long as they have to do it. And these are the ones that I'm talking about, not necessarily in this order. Mr. Shaw from Roseburg, Mr. Walton from Roseburg, Mr. Johnson from Bend. Where is Ellen Lowe from?
From Salem.
From Salem. And Martin Davis?
Portland.
From Portland.
Yeah.
Okay.
The only comment I would make, Mr. Chairman, is I prefer to be on the Senate floor during propositions and motions because there's reconsideration motions that I have given notice for.
But you're. That's fine. And I'm going to have to make a few excursions on the floor myself this morning in the course of this hearing. I got a bill to carry and a few other things like that. And so the hearing is not going to be without an interruption. Okay. Martin Davis is from Portland. Don Manchus from, I always mispronounce his name, Don, I'm sorry. In Beaverton. Where, Joyce Cohen, where are you from?
I live in Lakeside, so I can't come back.
Does it inconvenience you greatly to do so?
No, I'm making no sense.
Okay. All right. And this will be up for, we've got next week's calendar set up. Why don't we put it on for hearing work session on Tuesday next week at 8 o'clock in the morning. We'll be back on that. Okay. Joyce, I'm going to cross your name off then for now. Fred and Ed Sullivan, I gather you'll be around anyway, and so we won't hear your report. And Wes, same as you.
We do have an amendment, Senator.
You do?
Yes.
Are they going to make a significant change in the bill?
No.
Well, why don't you submit the amendments? Don't testify to them today. We'll have them. And do it on Tuesday, okay? But let us have the amendments. Okay, give them to the dean there. Have I left anybody out from some distance? Okay.
Senator, Mr. Johnson here from Bend, on the amendment, perhaps he can testify to it.
Okay, fine. Let's take him right now, Art. This is on 2548.
2548, right. I'm Art Johnson, City Manager of Bend. Wes Kvarson and I were the original drafters of the legislation 2463, which was incorporated into 2548. It incorporated the idea of having area planning commissions and or joint commissions. And when the bill was finally drafted and engrossed as 2548, the language did not specifically include the idea of the single area planning commission. And in Bend, we have an area growth policy, which includes the city and an area outside. We have the county planning commission, the county commission, and the city, as well as the Chamber of Commerce, also endorsing the idea of having an area planning commission whereby the city planning commission would be expanded, additional members added in this outside unincorporated area so that we could have a single planning commission functioning within the boundaries of this urban growth area. The amendment that we are requesting that you add to the language in 2548 would be the authority granted under this subsection shall be construed to permit creation of a single area planning commission to perform the functions otherwise exercised by separate city and county planning commissions and to permit creation of a single area planning commission in an area consisting of one or more cities and additional territory outside the cities. Now, this is permissive legislation that we are requesting here. I did hear, for example, over television, when they were trying to brief this bill, they said that this is a joint commission because in some areas, city planning commissions and county planning commissions have differences of opinion. This isn't the idea at all. It's just to have a concentration in an urban area of a single area planning commission, and they missed the point because of the original language as contained in 2548. And I think this would add clarification. Wes, would you like to comment on your city attorney?
Mr. Chairman, our legal counsel, Wes Kvarsten, our legal counsel in Salem has said that without this clarifying amendment, he would be very hesitant to recommend an intergovernmental agreement bringing together a single area planning commission for the Salem area. Representative Morris is in support of this. He mentioned it earlier in his testimony. We strongly urge it to be adopted.
Chairman,
Senator,
do you remember the Senate Bill 826?
No, I'm not. Not until this point.
I'm somewhat familiar with it, Senator.
I know you are. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could look at that bill. Relate Senate Bill 100 in gross 2548 and 826 with this amendment and see what you get. What you get is a planning commission that is listed in Senate Bill 826. I wish you'd looked at it now.
I'm glad to do that.
And
mm-hmm.
Comment by mail if you wish.
Glad to do that. I think just to conclude our remarks, unless you have any questions.
Have further questions? Mm-hmm.
No.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mr. Walton.
My name is Dudley C. Walton. I am a lawyer from Roseburg, Oregon. I've been there 25 years. Our firm is Geddes Walton in Richmond. We represent the city of Roseburg, the city of Riddle, and have so for over 20 years, and numerous other cities and municipal bodies in the county. I am a consultant by way of walk-in business for the Douglas County Planning Commission for legal opinions. I practice before that body. I'm not retained. I spent 2 hours yesterday morning in an informal and unexpected conference with two of the Board of Commissioners of Douglas County, which time this bill, Senate, or House Bill 2548, was only casually mentioned. The purpose of the conference, as it turned out, was to pick my brain as to what the difference was between a legislative and a judicial function under the Pisano case and what they were supposed to do in respect to all these things. I have drafted the manual of procedure for the Douglas County Planning Commission to hold the hearings which, it is, in my judgment, are required under the Fasano decision by that body in making the decisions on those areas they have characterized as an exercise of judicial authority. I give you this as a background so you know the point of view from which I speak.
Speak up a little bit, maybe the people back
in the Surely. I direct my attention to House Bill and Gross House Bill 2548. I only saw the bill day before yesterday, and I had never heard of it before. We were concerned that by reason of our recent experience, and I tried, we'll call it, the first case before the Douglas County Planning Commission under the Fasano ruling with respect to a zone change, which consumed from 8:30 till 11 o'clock in an effort to carry the burden of proof, and we were so successful. It is obvious there were 20-odd items of similar character on that agenda, none of which were heard that evening because the Planning Commission had had it at the end of that time, and I don't, I understand it. I agree with your concept of the appointment of the hearings officer. I think it's an absolute necessity. I would submit to you that it is, and without reservation, as did Mr. Fasano, that the line of appeal should go directly to the circuit court and bypass the county court, which is, in essence, the executive body of the county and the legislative body of the county. Its judicial functions have been removed in our county some time ago, and to reinstitute them in a matter that is of such substantial concern to the property owners of our county would be a mistake. Further, you're going to end up there in circuit court anyway, because where you have substantial matters involved, and most of them are, so far as the individual property owners are concerned, and for those who may object to what the property owner wants, they're going to want a judicial determination. So you're just adding another step. I would submit to you that you have the appeal from the hearings officer go by whatever appropriate procedure it should be. I realize that, and I agree with that their Chapter 34 has only one procedure, the writ of review, which will really fit moving from this kind of a officer to the court, and it may have its deficiencies, but at the moment it's all we have until the legislature provides us with some other procedure. In any event, it can be used. It is not clear what the court does under a writ of review, whether they're going to make a de novo determination on the record or look only for error. But in any event, it would be far preferable than burdening the county commissioners, who have plenty to do, without hearing the rehearing, and they will rehear on these matters coming from this hearings officer. The Planning Commission won't be able to function unless they have some tribunal, and your hearing officer idea is a good one. With respect to the forepart of the bill, which has to do with the destruction of the concept of the Planning Commission, and believe me, that bill, the bill does this. It is a gutting of the Planning Commission concept.
Okay, what are you referring to specifically?
I'm referring to those sections of the bill which have to do, probably section 8 and previous, and a few others, which change the authority of the Planning Commission to hire their people, create what I would characterize as knee-jerk Planning Commission members who are directly responsible to the county commissioners and can be removed for without cause. Now, no responsible citizen is going to accept a position on a planning commission if he's going to be nothing but a puppet. What's left to them to determine, if you read this bill in relation to the remaining sections governing planning commissions and land use, is some kind of a vague advisory position to the county court or the county board of commissioners. Now, it was my understanding that the concept of the Planning Commission land use and planning function was to remove as much as possible from the political arena, and it is in the political arena in the county court.
Let me ask you a question.
This function.
What other agency of local government doesn't really have the approval required by the county commissioners or what the governing body is, because all employees are hired in?
Well, I can't answer that, but so far as I'm concerned, what you're doing here in a matter that is of grave concern to individuals' property rights, you're doing the same thing as if you'd tell the State Highway Commission that the governor was going to appoint the state highway engineer, and he was the one to whom he was responsible. Now, think about that concept, because that's what you're doing. The law presently...
It said that the director... The director shall be the chief administrative officer in charge of the planning department of the county with what it creates.
And who appoints him?
Who appoints him?
Under this bill.
Well, the county commission appoints him.
And now the planning commission appoints him. Now, that what you're doing, you go down through this bill, and they're substituting the governing body, as the term used, for commission. What they're doing, is, in my judgment, is emasculating the planning commission. That's what's being done here. Now, it may be in some counties this fits the need, but it doesn't in ours. And they're working well under the present circumstances. Now,
in fact, if the planning commission doesn't appoint the planning director, the county commissioners want, and they feel strongly about it, they're going to kick them all out anyway, or make them feel miserable, they're going to leave.
Well, that has not occurred in our county, but if you pass this bill, they will kick them all out. But right now, they've got to have cause. And if you're going to have some kind of planning where you have people of substance who you'd want making decisions with respect to your land on that commission, you're not going to make them nothing but a puppet. And Senator Carson addressed himself to that question, and I agree with him entirely. That is a matter of substance here. In respect to planning commission. Now, if you want to do away with planning commissions and put it all back in that county court situation where they don't have time to pay any attention to these things and run the county as well, so be it.
That's different, all right. This does not do that.
Yes, it does. I submit to you that in effect it
does. Maybe some of the other things you say, but it doesn't do that.
Well, it will in effect do this because we have been involved with this backstairs business of the running of the planning commission by a commissioner who thought that that's what he was entitled to do and that they had the authority. Now, the question is, do you want an independent body, a non-political group, to be vested with some authority for the direction of the planning and land development efforts in a county, or do you want it in the hands of the political people who are subject to the telephone? And that's what occurs. Because if you put it into the put the power for the direction into the political body, then it becomes a question of what I call waging the yowlers. And they're inclined
in the area of pro-local control argument or anti-local control argument?
Well, I'm for the local control. You can be assured of that. But what I'm saying is this. You've got to, under the Fasano decision, provide a vehicle to hear these matters. And I compliment you for doing it. I was unaware it was being done and concerned as to what are we going to do at this late date in getting something accomplished. But you've got two things coupled here. You got a necessity coupled with a complete change of concept of principle of planning. When you do this bill. Now, they ought to be segregated. And I'll tell you what my ultimate judgment is, and that is that the four-part of this bill that has to do with the sweeping change of the concept of planning by planning commissions and who has the authority should be segregated from the setting up of a tribunal, and the tribunal portion should be adopted. I have not had an opportunity, as Mr. Fasano stated, to submit to you specifics, and everyone, a lawyer, has his own language, and I understand his concern about the word aggrieved, and I agree with it. You're going to have anybody that comes in at a late date have a right to come in, and you don't know who you're going to be met with when you get there, so be it. But forget the words. You're going to have to do something, and we'll have to see how it works for 2 years. But my conclusion is that the thing to do is to set up a procedure, which you're doing, for handling these things that the Fasano decision requires to be handled by a tribunal, and then leave the planning, the general planning method alone for 2 years and see how it works from the standpoint of having a separate hearings officer to determine these things they've said are judicial. And give the Planning Commission then an opportunity to legislate or make recommendations for legislation they have and to administer that staff. Now, if you don't do this, as I say, you're going to end up with a totally new concept. When you read all these bills together, particularly when you say you're going to kick out all the planning commission if under Senator Halleck's bill that I just read this morning, for just because you don't like what they do, as somebody suggested. This, I feel, is an error. I submit to you that those things should be segregated in the sense of setting up the procedure. I don't want to take up all the time. 10 minutes is, and I've said it. I've taken up 10 minutes, and I've said it. If you have any questions, well, so be it.
I was about to ask you any questions. Thank you very much, Dennis, for coming. And we're going to transcribe your remarks so that the other committee members have the benefit of it. Mr. Shaw?
I'm Al Shaw from Roseburg, representing the Chamber of Commerce.
Are you the Chamber of Commerce staff?
I am a chairman of the legislative committee for the Chamber
of
Commerce.
Is that a staff position? I mean, are you paid as a Chamber of Commerce?
No. Just a volunteer, like the planning commission. And my job, my principal business, is real estate counseling service, and I'm thereby licensed as a real estate broker under those conditions. My concern, and is similar to Mr. Walton's as he just presented, is we have a deep concern and we also have a deep need. And the concern, and I'd like to also address this to 2965 because of the Chamber of Commerce, House Bill 2965, in the concern area, and that is delegating such power to the governing body to appoint at their pleasure the Planning Commission, who serves at their pleasure. And we're concerned at this time about the power of being fixed with the governing body and also their ability to hire and fire the planning staff members. Through our experiences in the past several years in Douglas County, I can say thank God we had a planning commission. They consist of laymen. They aren't necessarily completely knowledgeable or experienced in the field of planning, but neither are the county commissioners. And that's our deep concern, and as far as House Bill 2548 is concerned, we think we're mixing two things together. One is the fact that the beginning part or the portion of this bill that relates to taking the authority away from the Planning Commission should be eliminated and leave it with the Planning Commission as laymen and keep it out of politics. As my principal business is concerned, and my concern here is we're interested in facts and fairness and not to be involved in the politics as it would be with those elected officials. The bill as it stands right now would more or less render the Planning Commission with no authority, and they would be useless, and again, the quality, if any, that served on that would have actually no purpose from what we can see. The other thing is we need appeals officer or tribunal or some form of paid representation, some officer that's paid to hear appeals. And once that appeal is heard, we would prefer to have that go directly to the circuit court and not to the county commissioners, because again, you'll probably just get a repeat. Again, we're involved with politics. Let's get it out. Let's get it before the judge. I personally, and speaking for the chamber, we would prefer to be before a judge anytime with a better feeling of leaving politics out of it and a decision made. So to reiterate, just two concerns. One, the first one is that we would like the beginning of that eliminated because of the appointment at pleasure and the release of Planning Commission members without cause, just because at the whim of the governing body, and also the dire need for for officers and hearings. Now I have a little bit of background on this. the fact that I was born and raised in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, 100 miles from New York, and 90 miles from Philadelphia, and I watched planning. There's planning and there's planning. And their planning was how to stop incoming people instead of planning for what was happening. And it became haphazard and it became a mess. And then by virtue of job opportunity, I had an opportunity to live in Los Angeles for 10 years, Los Angeles area, and again saw similar situations, a local level politics and so on. I don't know the full cure, but I know as long as you have people involved that come under pressures or have axes to grind, and we all do to some extent, if we can get as far removed from that as possible, the better off we are. And appointments, again, get right down to the human element and create problems.
Thank you very much. Mr. Davis?
I'm representing the Oregon Environmental Council. I just want to say that I worked on Senate Bill 100 quite extensively on the ad hoc committee, and the feeling there was that the state did have a role, but it was less than we'd have liked, but that local government, most planning jurisdictions should be left by the local governing bodies. And so this is the other side of the Senate Bill 100 picture, cleaning up the local government end. And the feeling there, of course, was that ultimately the governing body should have the ultimate decision-making authority. And the Planning Commission was only advisory. And in fact, the philosophy was that the Planning Commission should do the planning, the hearings officer should enforce the plan, and the appeals from the hearings officer should go to the county governing body to ensure that he was doing his job adequately. But then, of course, there would still be judicial review from that. Now, our experience has been in the environmental land use planning field that planning commissions have, in the past, been very unsympathetic to our points of view. We have exerted pressure on the governing body, and in the Tillamook situation, what happened there was the county commission actually said, well, from now on, until we rewrite out this mess in the Planning Commission, we will in fact do the planning. And so what actually happened, there was a complete stop of any planning in Tillamook County. Everything had to be overridden by the county commissioners and who were responsive to the people. That's really all I've got to say. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Let me ask one question, Martin. You're talking about the ad hoc committee.
Yeah.
This committee met during what period of time?
During about 10-day period of time to extensively rewrite Senate Bill 100. And I was on this committee that in the House that discussed this, and we did have a pretty good consensus from the different points of view that this was the way to go on this question.
All right, fine. Thank you. Don, we're done. Okay.
I'll be waiting for you at the Planning Commission meeting.
Keep it up here.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Don Ishmaskis, City Attorney of Beaverton, and I appear to say only on my own behalf, simply because I didn't realize the hearing was today and the council does not meet till Monday, so I speak only for myself. You asked for specific amendments. I would suggest that a section be inserted to repeal ORS 227.040 for this reason. You're amending 227.030, looking at it now, and the thrust of that is, of course, not to specify the number of planning commissioners, 5, 7, 9, 140, what have you. And yet, if you don't repeal 227.040, it says at the first meeting, the seven appointed members shall choose their term of office by lot.
Tell me that again.
All right. In Section 2 of 2965, that's the bill I'm addressing my remarks to. Section 2 changes it, members shall be appointed by the city council, et cetera. So there's no specified number. Terrific, I agree with that concept. However, 227.040 has the present language, at the first meeting of the commission, the seven appointed members shall choose their term by lot, one for two, three by six.
359 that said that the numbers could be 5, 7, or 9, and that passed the Senate, and it's been reported out to pass recommendation from the House Judiciary Committee.
All right,
I think it's Judiciary.
I wasn't aware of that.
Okay, but what I want, does this take care of that? Do you know?
Conflict is here, they've been the same section of the statute, 359, and then the same section of the section 29.
So that's the one that Don's addressing himself to, that second section, okay.
So actually, the 227.040 could be repealed, I would think, even with the two bills reporting out. You would want to repeal it, not specify 7 and 1, if you're in fact having 5, 7, and 9 permitted in one bill. In this bill, you have no set number.
Well, the reason we have no set number here because of the 359.
That's right. Now,
so we don't have to mention the number there. Now,
if 359 says 5, 7, or 9, that would be in conflict with 227.040.
I think it probably amends that. Is that correct, Don, or do you know?
I don't know.
Well, I think the conflict between the bills, Mr. Chairman, because 359 is the same ORS that 2965 does.
Okay, give me that ORS number there again.
227.040, Mr. Chairman.
227.040.
Yes.
030.
Well, 030 is the one that sets the number. 227.040 is the term of office, and that has the 7.
The conflicts between 359 and 2965 occur in 227.030.
All right, we'll get legislative counsel on that right away, because maybe 359 I'll get pulled back a little bit.
Very briefly, I support generally the concept of the bill. There was a question. I would prefer to see the language of House Bill 2463, which simply says the commission membership term of office, et cetera, shall be provided by ordinance. And the reason for saying that, of course, is quite simply a question of home rule.
Well, that would only work if we passed that other bill, 3009.
That's right. Okay. The second remark I have to make is only three. The second one has to do with Section 5 of re-engrossed House Bill 2965. And if that section is intended to prohibit a vote or participation by a member who has a substantial financial interest or some other type of interest in the bill, I would assume it would be subservient to what we call the doctrine of necessity, which we run into sometimes because you may have 5 council members who are in an assessment district. Of course, they're affected by the form where they're going to approve. They have to vote. There's no one else to do it. Same with the Planning Commission. You may run into that problem. Whether it needs a specific amendment, I doubt it. As far as the hearing provisions go, quite frankly, the City of Beaverton has had this question before it in the past at my suggestion as to a hearing officer, and I'm quite taken aback by some of the comments made by the other witnesses as to having a hearing officer and then jump directly into court. The trust of the Beaverton not desiring a hearing officer procedure in the past has simply been not to put another body between the council and the Planning Commission and the people who come to testify. But we're quite happy to have a optional provision to enable us to have hearing officers. Section 6, subsection 2 says a hearing means a quasi-judicial hearing authorized or required by the ordinances and regulations of a city adopted pursuant to ORS 227-230. Quite frankly, we don't adopt our ordinances and regulations pursuant to 227-230. We adopt them pursuant to the general grant of power in our charter. And I do not look to it as a city attorney to those statutes, neither does the council. So you may wish to consider putting in charter or ordinances of the city. And as far as the question just raising, over in Section 9, on page 4, Section 9, subsection 3, application shall not be approved unless the proposed use of land would be in compliance with the comprehensive plan for the city. Cities at the present time are not required to have a comprehensive plan. Cities have a well-considered plan. And of course, there's a considerable body of case law on what that means. So I would think comprehensive plan in that section would have to be correlated with the well-considered plan provisions that are now in ORS Chapter 227. The other comment I have, as far as aggrieved party, I would defer to Mr. Sullivan. I'm sure he's going to give you quite a...
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I would defer to Mr. Sullivan, the County Council of Washington County, on that, except to say this, that I consider aggrieved to be something of a constitutional right or a substantial economic detriment as defined by our leading treatise writers in zoning such as Anderson. At the other extreme, if you don't have aggrieved, then you have what we call an officious intermeddler. And I think the chairman would appreciate that. And that's basically all I have to say, Mr. Chairman.
John?
Yes, sir.
I'd be happy to have you put those amendments to the right.
I'd be happy to send them down. Quite frankly, I was looking at the engrossed bill until this morning when I saw the re-engrossed, and that's why I didn't...
If you could do that, I'd appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your help. Okay, now, let's see. Ellen Lowe, you were from Salem.
I'm from Salem.
So who's the lady from, Joyce Cohen from Lake Oswego?
How long? Do you want me to say something else?
How long does it take?
I can look at it. 3 minutes.
Fine. Why don't we do that and then I'll say your trip.
Tri-County New Politics, I'm Joyce Cohen, live in Lake Oswego, Oregon, and I'm here representing Tri-County New Politics, a nonpartisan organization in the Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington County area. We have been following along the legislative process in this area. We're concerned with citizen involvement and responsive government to the citizens. We would support the Planning Commission's being responsible to the elected body in this case, and we think that the Planning Director and the approval of the comprehensive plan should be under the jurisdiction of elected county officials who then are responsible to the voters as to who they appoint and how they appoint them and what those appointees do. The responsibility to establish the policy that belongs to the Planning Director, we feel he must be much more in tune to what the citizens see, and the only way we have is through our elected officials. We have no contact with the advisory and the Planning Commission as it's written now. There's one thing in Section 2, Subsection 3, if you consider making amendments, we would ask that the word financing be inserted in line 32, Section 2, Subsection 3. And this would then read, no more than two voting members shall be engaged principally in the buying, selling, and financing or developing of real estate for profit. And then it continues on. We think that those two go hand in hand, and they would be part and parcel of a development kind of growth. The need and desirability of coordination of land use planning between cities and counties is recognized, and special emphasis should be placed on the boundary areas where conflicts and most rapid growth would occur. So in reference to Section 11, we've come up with a problem in our county with the people who belong to our organization in terms of this leaves out anyone who lives beyond the 6-mile limit in a rural area as being considered to as an advisory planning group. So we would then like to submit an amendment along those lines. We think that the development pressures do extend beyond the 6-mile limit because there are people in needy Oregon who are involved in extensive development of their area, and they would not be considered as this is written. So we would ask that section 11, page 5, be amended to read, for the purpose of obtaining, this is current, for the purpose of obtaining citizen participation in and to assist in coordinating land use planning for all lands situated within the county, the governing body of each county may establish advisory committees on land use planning for each area in the county composed of a city located principally within the county and such lands surrounding the city and located within 6 miles outside the boundaries of the city. That's what's in there now. And we would now add this one little phrase. Additional area advisory committees may be established, and would continue on with wording which is in there now, as the governing body determines to be a reasonable land use planning unit. Each such community shall be composed of residents of the area to be represented. And we think that would...
Have you got that language there?
Yes, I have copies. I'll give it to you. That would be our concerns, would be to straighten out that one area in terms of, so that I'm sure there are other counties that don't have too many cities and still have rural areas that could be, you could find communities who would want to have advisory committees, and this would allow for that. Thank you.
You want to get those names?
Yeah. I would say one more thing, that we would be in support with the this amendment also, the one submitted by Mr. Johnson and Mr. Kvarsten on section 2.
Now, there's nobody here that's from any place other than Salem, not here on a regular basis, that wants to testify today. Is that correct? Okay, that'll conclude the hearing on 2548, 2965, and 832 for today, but they'll be back on for Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock to finish up the hearing. Thank you all for your cooperation.